Music in Monkstown returns for its sixth year from the 5th to the 8th of September, and this year's programme features concerts from some of the world's finest musicians, the Saucony String Quartet amongst them, and indeed the pianist Hugh Tinney, who was with me earlier on today in Studio 8. Hugh has a very busy year ahead of him, and Beethoven is at the very heart of it, so it's hardly surprising that he started our session by playing some Beethoven. Hugh Tinney there with the Allegretto movement from Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. And Hugh is with me in studio. Ahead of, as I was saying in my introduction, Hugh, a very busy year really ahead for you. Music from Monkstown is the pressing issue, I suppose, coming up. When you're preparing for something like that, do you, you know, for the whatever, the 4, 5, 6 days ahead of it, are you just thinking about the programme you're playing there and putting everything else to the one side? Or do you have to keep other stuff boiling along underneath?
You have to kind of keep other stuff boiling along because, for example, I have to go to Westport straight away 1 week after that and doing a very big work down there, the Archduke Trio of Beethoven. There's a lot of Beethoven around at the moment. So I kind of have to keep an eye on that to just keep it boiling. But sure, the Monkstown will take precedence and I will do some kind of playthroughs of it just for myself, yeah, where I'll kind of do the whole thing and time it all and just get into the habit of feeling the programme as a whole.
Yeah, because in fact, the movement that we heard from Moonlight there, you're playing the full Moonlight Sonata in Monkstown. It really is one of those pieces. I often wonder what it's like for a player approaching a piece like that, because most people will know, and particularly the very slow movement, the very atmospheric slow movement, and you think, oh, that's beautifully relaxed and it's a sense of moonlight about it, as the name suggests. Or, you know, the very fast, there's one of those very fast movements, and so it's almost like clouds rushing across in front of the moon. I guess as a player, you can't for one moment start thinking about relaxed moonlight or clouds or anything like that.
No, you kind of get soaked in, if that's the word. You get absorbed into what you're doing. And I guess, yes, that opening movement that everybody knows so well, aptly called Moonlight, and it's so chilled, but in a very beautiful way. The harmonies are so poignant, and this repeated kind of drum roll rhythm, if you like, dum, bob, om, bum, ba, bum, you know, that which is going going all this through. And yet it has such calmness about it as well, and there's a sadness about it. Then, of course, we've got the little Allegretto, and that's like this sort of moment of happiness wedged in between two darknesses, a slow darkness and a madcap rushing darkness, you know? So your one chance to kind of unbutton is that Allegro and just have a bit of fun with it, you know? It's more bucolic. Right. Especially in the trio section. And then the last section, it's, as you say, it's like scudding clouds shooting across the sky, and the odd bolt of lightning as well. I saw that incredible picture of the golfing chap getting struck there by last weekend.
Yeah.
I think a Northern Irish guy.
It was, yeah.
In Belfast. And the photograph was amazing, where you saw the tree literally go on fire instantly. So there's a bit of that in the last movement of the Moonlight Sonata.
But yeah, I don't know. Can you allow those kind of very romantic, very, you know, picturesque and those images, can you allow those fleet across your mind when you're playing?
Yes, you can. Because, I mean, the actual musical memory is so multi-layered. I've talked about this a lot. You know, there's what's in your hands, there's the harmonies in your head, there's the melody, there's all sorts of things, and the visual stuff as well. That you know, there are some bits that will keep functioning, notably your hands. So that allows you the freedom to actually have a little bit of a think about, you know, oh, that's a nice painting, that you know, across the room, or you know, or why did that person let that umbrella drop just as I was coming to the best bit?
Or whose phone is ringing during the quiet movement?
Exactly, you know, and you cut through. Yeah, so you can actually, and you can reflect. Now that's one of the great things, because that means you have the freedom to kind of mold the music at that instant and to make it hopefully a one-off performance, not just a repeat of a record, you know?
Yeah. It's hardly surprising that there is a lot of Beethoven happening. To go back to the event in Monkstown, you have Beethoven at the beginning and then the Waldstein Sonata at the end of that. You're playing some Chopin in the middle. You're going to play Chopin for us later, so we'll talk about him then. But also in that programme in Monkstown are the Nocturne, four pieces from Nocturne, a Raymond Dean piece. You commissioned this piece from Raymond Dean.
I did. Just under 10 years ago, a set of 12 pieces taking about a half a concert or 45 minutes. I recorded it. I gave the first performances and recorded it at the time. But I've been playing bits of it often. In fact, earlier this year, I played the whole thing at the Dublin Contemporary Music Fest in March. Taking on the whole thing is difficult, because Raymond's music is very challenging, both for the listener, certainly, but very much for the player. He's a fine pianist himself, so his stuff is not to be sneezed at from a preparation point of view. The link with the Beethovens, I originally devised this programme a few years ago, and Raymond himself acknowledged that the Moonlight Sonata was a kind of an inspiration, because his piece is called Nocturne, which is kind of a diary of the night, hence Noct. And he has this association, he said, from a young age with the moonlight, the key of the Moonlight Sonata, the C sharp minor, the dark key. And so that's a key that underlies his own series. But the very last piece has a blaze of C major light, very, very near the end. And that kind of led me to think of, well, what about the Waldstein Sonata, which is like the antithesis? It's so happy and so bright, and it's C major, all the white keys, you know, no darkness. So that's kind of how I have the two poles, if you like, at the two ends of the concert.
And it links in with something you're doing yourself a little bit later this year in the National Concert Hall, which is you're really looking at Beethoven as a real pivotal figure in terms of music. You have the classical music of Haydn and Mozart and those strict 4-bar, 8-bar rules and all those classical rules obeyed. But then Beethoven started to say, what if I don't stick to those? What if I don't stick to those rules? What if I mess things around a little bit?
Yes.
And allow a more of a romantic feel, in the sense of allow my emotions to come through this music in a different way from an intellectual way.
Yes.
How important is he in that respect?
Oh, well, he's huge. And the Moonlight is at an interesting juncture. It's kind of virtually halfway through his 32 sonatas. And he wrote it and a companion work. And he called them both Sonata sonata like a fantasy, sonata quasi fantasia. So the fantasy element is suddenly coming out very strongly, as you can hear in that remarkable first movement of The Moonlight, which pretty well everybody knows. And this is him starting, if you like, to really do something very much original. So he writes the first movement, which is actually in strict sonata form, but you wouldn't know it because it's so disguised underneath the slow flowing triplets, and it feels much more like early Chopin or something like that, or Schubert. So it's pointing very much the way forward towards the Romantics.
But even the fact that he asks of the pianist to sit down for a first movement, not a first movement that's going to be a nice, you know, hoppy allegro movement or something like that. Now your fingers are all warmed up. Now we're going to go into the serious, dark, slow movement and you can let all your emotions flow. No, sit down at the piano and get yourself into the calm, mild frame of mind that this opening movement is going to demand.
Yes, yes. And I think, again, it's a kind of a transmogrification, because I think there were hints of this in some of his predecessors. Certainly Haydn had a habit of sticking in sometimes very, very contrasting sections where, for example, he might have directions, say, leave the pedal down completely so it blurs the harmonies, just maybe for about 8 bars. But he never did something like an entire first movement in the way of that Moonlight, to actually say the whole thing is like a fantasy. And C.P.E. Bach is another one who was a predecessor of Haydn, and I'm learning some of his music for that series at the moment, and I find it lovely because, again, the contrasts are extreme, they're sudden, but I've been kind of discovering what an amazing musician C.P.E. Bach was, and also as a theoretical musician. He wrote a very, very famous treatise which led to a lot more theoretical stuff afterwards. So Beethoven was certainly very aware of C.P.E. Bach. Yeah.
To what extent did the technical developments, that the piano had become a much stronger instrument, you know, it had a frame and a way of being strung inside that allowed louder playing, piano forte, softer playing, sustained playing with the pedals. To what extent was Beethoven exploiting that in his composition, which would lead on into people like Chopin later on?
I think he certainly was. He certainly was. I mean, if you compare the really early sonatas of Beethoven, like the first sort of 7 or so, clear inspiration of Haydn, of his teacher. The first 3 are dedicated to Haydn. You don't see anything like that kind of world at the beginning of The Moonlight, where he actually says, for the entirety of the movement, leave the pedal down. You know, the whole movement, which is 6 minutes long, leave the pedal down. You know, senza sordini, which was the old thing. I think
mute, isn't it?
Sordini was a mute. Yeah, exactly. So they used that, and in the early pianos, they had a kind of a knee action. You lifted your knee, which did the same thing as the modern pedal does, where you depress your foot. You know, but in both cases, it removed the mutes, and the mutes were the damper, what we call the dampers. So once you take away the damp, it just is like a harp, and it just resonates from top to toe. But this would only really work in a movement that was as soft as Beethoven's movement, because otherwise it could become a horrible roar. You know?
If there was too much movement, it'd just be blurred all over the place. And you mentioned the harp, which is the perfect link into Chopin and the harp etude that you're going to play for us as your second piece. When I listen to this, you hear this almost constant sound like a harp playing, arpeggios running all the time. And then this single note, almost single note melody ringing out the whole time. Is that on one finger for the most part?
It is. That top melody running right through the piece is essentially your little finger, your pinky.
The top of your right hand.
Which perhaps 5 minutes before had been lifted while you were having a cup of tea in the old style, you know. But now it's actually got to pay its weight in gold, as it were.
Well, your poor pinky be tired then after this particular etude.
Yeah, although funny enough, it's not actually the fifth finger that's tired. It's the forearm that gets a bit tired because it's quite stretchy and you're having to cover a lot of the keyboard. As you can imagine, a harp, you know, a hand swirling up and down a harp. So you actually, between your two hands, you have to cover about 4 or 5 octaves of it. And that does become a little bit stretching on the forearm.
Well, okay, I hope you can manage to give us the 3 or 4 minutes of it without stretching the forearm too much. Hugh Tinney with the Chopin Harp Etude.
Hugh Tinney there performing Chopin's Harp Etude, and Hugh will be performing on Friday evening, September the 15th at Music in Monkstown, musicinmonkstown.ie for full details, westportchambermusic.ie for what he's doing the week after.